Are you feeling overwhelmed planning your trip to Alaska? I've got you. We'll sort it out today. Welcome to the Alaska Uncovered podcast with me, your host, Jenny Twing Flaming. My occasional co-host and full-time husband, Jay, and I bring you accurate, helpful, and entertaining information about Alaska travel and life in Alaska. Today, I'm sharing some basics about Alaska trip planning, including how far ahead to plan, how to decide where to go, and what order to plan things in. Today, Jay will be interviewing me.
Hello, Jenny.
Hello.
This is Jay here behind the big red switch in the booth. I'm not much of a trip planner, so in general, I'm not a person who does a lot of thinking ahead. I just kind of let the wind take me where it wants to, but Alaska's not really a place where you can wing it on a trip. So luckily for me and you, Jenny's here to tell us how to do it a lot better. And because nobody loves a monologue, I'm going to interview her about it. So I think we should start off by just asking, what are the biggest mistakes people make when they're planning a trip to Alaska?
That's a really good question. There's really two things that I would say are the biggest mistakes people make planning their trip. The first one is trying to do too much and go to too many places. Alaska is such a huge place. And I lived there for 7 years. I spend several weeks there a year. I'm not going to see everything in my lifetime, even with that. So I think that's probably the biggest mistake is trying to do too much and then just feeling really frantic and overwhelmed instead of being able to get to know Alaska better through less places overall. So I think that's the first one. And then the other one I would say is obsessing over packing. Now, don't get me wrong, it is important to think about what you're packing, but sometimes people obsess over the perfect rain jacket or the perfect boots, and that doesn't really exist. So for summer visits, you got to have a rain jacket, and you're going to be much happier with waterproof footwear. Kind of everything else, just don't obsess over it. So it's worth thinking about and planning for, but you don't need a whole new wardrobe and you don't need to spend hours worrying about if you've packed the wrong thing. It's going to be fine. So I would say those are the two things.
You know, the doing too much thing really resonates with me. Mm-hmm. I was in Washington, D.C. doing a temporary duty assignment once, and I'd never been to the Smithsonian. So I walked over and I ended up chatting with one of the docents a bit, and he said the only way that you could have a bad experience at the Smithsonian is just try to see the entire Smithsonian.
Like, yeah, that would be too much for sure. Yeah.
You know, if you spend too much time trying to like run through all the things, and when we went to Paris and you took me to see the Louvre, you said the same thing. Like the Louvre is way beyond what a person can see in a single visit.
Yeah.
Now true. You take that and you multiply it times the enormity of the state of Alaska, and yeah. you're not even going to be able to hit the highest points. Just experience the things that you're going to get to do. And I think striving too much to see too many other things can like ruin that experience if you're not careful.
Totally.
That's a good point. Okay. So how far ahead do you need to plan? I know that we've both spoken to our friends and a lot of folks who were talking about, you know, bucket list trips someday, years and years in the future. And then I know that you get contacted through your website fairly frequently by people who are leaving imminently. Mm-hmm. So ideally, how far ahead should you be making a plan for a trip to Alaska?
Yeah, that's another great question. And like many things, it depends. So the biggest thing it depends on how particular you are. So for example, if you want to go to Denali National Park in July on a specific date and stay in a specific hotel, you need to have that booked like in the fall, like September, October. Some places don't open for booking until December, but you would want to be right on it if it's July and your dates aren't flexible. Same thing with Seward. For some reason, Seward, the hotels in Seward book up really early, like in the early fall of the previous year. They're always, you can always find something usually, but it might not be great or might not be available on your dates or might be only available one night, something like that. So if you are like, I just want to go to Alaska and like just kind of figure it out and I'm not too particular about where I go, then you could plan pretty last minute. So I think it really depends on how solid of an idea you have in your head about what your trip is going to look like and how flexible you are about it. In general, I think it's good to have your hotels figured out 6 months ahead of time, especially if that might not be enough time for certain hotels in Denali for the middle of the summer and for places like Seward. But you may be able to, you know, you can often book a last minute trip if you're not too particular about where you stay and if you're just going to be based out of Anchorage or Fairbanks or, if you want to go to a place that just happens to have a room available for a couple days, then you could do it more last minute. But I think in general, 6 months to a year is good for a summer visit. Some people plan further out than that, and that is totally fine. One thing you should know if you're planning more than 9 months ahead is that some things may not be available for booking. So things in the summer often aren't available for booking until sometime in November, December. Sometimes it's sooner. So you'll just kind of have to look into that. Generally for cruises, you can usually book those up to 18 months in advance. It sort of depends on what time of year you're going. But again, if you're wanting to go on a particular cruise ship, particular ports on particular dates, then I would plan that a year ahead. But if you're like, I just want to go to Alaska and I'm going to take a cruise and you're flexible about your dates and the exact places you go and the exact ship that you're on, then you could plan it. You know, we're recording this at the end of February. You can definitely still book a cruise for this summer in Alaska for sure. So it just like a lot of things, it really depends on how picky you are about where you're going, but generally 6 months to a year is good.
You know, it's funny about the cruise. You can also do a very last minute cruise. You know, if they have,
yes,
they have availability, empty cabins, you can get them really, really at the last minute. But the issue is often getting there because you have to get to Seattle or Vancouver. And yes, you need to fly if you need to fly there. So if you live nearby and road trippable, you know, you could get on a ship next weekend sometimes.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get, you know, we're recording this in spring of 2023 and Southwest Airlines just had a really epic meltdown and
yeah,
flights are kind of difficult to get to right now and, you know, kind of all over the map. And so that's kind of a funny thing about the cruise. I think in the past, booking a cabin in the, you know, passage on the cruise was a bigger barrier. And right now I feel like it's more airlines.
Yeah. Right. Especially getting the schedule you want. Yeah. And that, since you mentioned airlines, generally for Alaska, for Americans, if you're coming from outside of the country, you might want to plan further ahead, but for booking flights to Alaska in the summer, I have found that around 6 months in advance is a good time to book flights. A lot of people will give you the advice that you should book flights about 3 months ahead, but I found in Alaska, it starts to get more expensive at that point. So I usually, for my summer trips, I usually book the airfare, the airline tickets in January, usually. Unless yeah, something comes up later.
That makes sense. It seems like the schedule is pretty settled by then and
yeah,
not changed too much. And also, yeah. So what's the first thing people should do when, you know, they have in their head, they want to go to Alaska? Where should they start mentally? What's the first thing they should start doing?
Yeah. I think the first thing is to prioritize and decide where you're going to go and not be moving to a different place every night. So you'll hear me say this over and over again. And if you get my weekly emails or you work with me as a travel planner, you will definitely hear me say over and over that prioritizing is really important. Just trust me and trust Jay that like less is more as far as different places so that you can really experience it and not just see everything go past you while you are driving, riding in a train or a boat or an airplane. You want to really be able to experience some things. So the very first thing is get on the same page with your travel crew. Find out what's most important to everybody and decide kind of what areas you're going to focus on. And I have some tools on my website that can help you with that. If you go to many of my Alaska articles, have a quiz where you can figure out what your traveler type is and some great itinerary ideas based on that. And I also have a planner for Alaska travel. It's a digital download that you can purchase on my website. I'll put the link in the, I'll put the links for all of these in the show notes too. So you can grab those if you want to take advantage of any of them. But the planner kind of also helps you with prioritizing and with the other steps, like just kind of breaking it down so it's not so overwhelming. But the very first step, mentally, as you're preparing, is prioritizing where you're going and getting on the same page with your travel partner or your travel group about that.
I love the quiz. It's super fun.
It is fun.
So I just to dig into that for a second longer. So I feel like it's hard to prioritize up front because you don't know necessarily what it is, you know, you don't know, is Anchorage where I want to be? Or you find out, like, do you have any suggestions on how people can educate themselves in a larger way about even what the priority options might be?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think what is good is to think about why are you taking this trip to Alaska and what's really important to you. And then the destinations can come from there. So for example, if you really want to focus on seeing wildlife, that can help you prioritize your trip in ways and experiences that give you the best opportunity for seeing wildlife. So right. A couple examples of that would be Denali is an amazing place for seeing land animals, especially the bus tour into the park. Someone who's really wanting to focus on wildlife, in my opinion, shouldn't miss that. Another great wildlife opportunity is any whale watching trip or glacier and wildlife cruise. And that would be in a different place, but you could do Denali and then a place like Seward or Valdez that has lots of marine life, wildlife focus. So that's one example. Or perhaps your group is really into hiking and you want to do some great hikes while you're in Alaska and you want to really focus on that. You know, then you want to go to places that have great hiking opportunities. Or maybe you want to get away from it all and go to a place that's more remote that not as many travelers get to, like Glacier Bay National Park or Wrangell St. Elias National Park or anywhere along the Richardson Highway, which is between Fairbanks and Valdez. Those are just a few examples. But I think really going back to what do I really care about in this trip? Or do I want to just look at amazing scenery? You know, that again, those are different things that can help you prioritize where to go.
Yeah. So I, you know, what I hear you saying is that the priority is going to be the prioritizing process is going to be about identifying the experience you want to have and also the experience your travel partners want to have if you're not traveling alone, and then identifying everything falls from that. That makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. If you're a bird watcher and you really want to see new species of bird, you should make that, like, identify that beforehand. And then that way you make sure you don't miss the opportunity to do the thing that supports you. Yeah, that totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. Well, then on a more practical thing, now you have this idea in your head about, so then what things should you plan first? You have an idea about your priorities. That doesn't really necessarily play out. We've already been talking about lodging and cruise ships and hotels and airport flights and how far out you have to think about them. So what's the first thing you have to nail down in your planning?
Yeah, great question. And this is maybe the most important thing we're going to talk about in this entire episode is, in my experience, you want to get your lodging figured out first. And that is different from what people normally do, including what I normally do when I plan a trip somewhere else. Often you look at flights and you're like, what are the best days to fly? And, you know, and it's good to look at that. But I strongly recommend that you figure out where you're going to be sleeping first. And the reason for that is that in Alaska, lodging is really expensive, whether that's a hotel or a vacation rental. It's going to be probably the biggest part of your budget for your trip. So it's limited. So I mentioned before that places like Denali and Seward, some hotels fill up very early. And if you've already committed to flights, if you've already purchased them, then you're stuck with certain dates. And it might be that if you wanted to stay in a particular hotel that sold out, if you could go a few days earlier or later, you might be able to stay there. So because lodging is limited and expensive, I recommend doing that first, which is different maybe than what people might be used to, and different than what I would do in other places. And by the way, I'm including in lodging cruises. So if you are taking a cruise either for your trip or as a part of your trip, definitely book the cruise first and then build everything else around that.
Yeah. My instinct is always to think about airline tickets first for long travel. So lodging is the first thing you think. What about everything else?
Yeah. Another thing that I think is good to at least look at, if not book before flights, is your transportation. So you want to do lodging first because your lodging will determine what kind of transportation you need. So you might be staying in places where you need to drive there, in which case you're going to need a rental car. You might be staying somewhere where you don't need to drive, and maybe you're going to take a small plane or a train. I would recommend doing that second, followed by your flights, and then tours after that. An exception to that is if you're doing something that's like a remote fishing lodge where it's kind of all inclusive, you kind of book everything together and then your flight. But for most people who are traveling on their own or even taking a cruise, this still applies because the cruise provides your lodging and how you're getting around. And if you're doing something pre or post cruise, you would also want to figure out that lodging and then deal with flights and then tours. One thing I will say about tours that are on cruise ships, so they're called shore excursions. If you're taking a tour that's off of your ship, they do in Alaska, they do sell out. So don't wait till the last minute to book your shore excursions. If something is really important to you, like if you really want to go whale watching or do a helicopter trip to a glacier, book that early, because those do fill up. And in general, I would say that flight scene is a tour that fills up. So sometimes people think, well, I'll just wait and book it at the last minute if the weather is good. You really can't do that. Everything will be booked. So flight scene tours would come before other tours. You definitely want to book any tour that is important to you in advance, but you can do that for most things. You can do that after you get the other things figured out.
I feel like most of the tours in Alaska too, you know, I'm always I want to wait and see what the weather is for almost every activity that's outdoors. Yeah. But I feel like in Alaska, like legitimately bad weather usually has an option. Like if they cancel the trip, you'll get your money back.
Sure.
There'll be another option.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's, you kind of can't wait to see what the weather is going to be like.
Yes. And especially for flight scene tours, you do have to mentally prepare for the possibility that it will be canceled because of weather, which I want to just mention is an important safety thing for everyone. So you don't, if the pilot says we cannot fly today, even if it's really disappointing, you definitely don't want to fly today if the pilot is saying it's not safe.
Yeah. You know, when I used to do remote work for the National Park Service, we flew all the time on float planes and with in bush planes. And we have to do this really rigorous training program actually to fly on some of these things where there's complete with an aircraft where they dunk you upside down in the water and you have to escape from it. It's all very like kind of, it's very exotic in its own way. But I remember that one of the main takeaway I got from the safety instructor was never try to talk a pilot into doing something they don't want to do.
Yeah.
It's just good. It's a good idea in life. If someone's an expert at something and they say, well, I don't think we should do this, you should probably not do it.
Yeah. That's really good advice in general.
Like life experience, right? So,
I want to say one other thing about flight scene, going to what Jay was just mentioning, all that training, he did that because he was an employee going to a remote location. You don't have to do training like that on a flight scene tour. No, you just go and the pilot takes care of everything. No. Yeah.
What I was talking about was,
you don't have to practice jumping out of a plane in the water.
No. The things I'm talking about are flights to lakes that have never been landed on, hundreds of miles from the airport. I mean, really crazy stuff, not flights. Yeah, that's a good point. You don't have to plan on anything like that. No. So what about for someone like me who really, really hates to be locked into plans?
Yes.
What elements of this can you just wing it on, you know, at the last minute, just see what works out? What's going on? Are there any components of this, or do you need to really have it, you know, in lockstep before, months before you go?
It is such a great question. And Jay, you are not alone in not wanting to be locked in like that. I actually don't love that either. If I really want to do something, I'll do it, but I prefer a bit more serendipity in my travel experiences than having every minute planned. So many people feel that. Many people are like, can I just wing it? Can I just drive around and do stuff? So this is what I would say about that. Yes, you can wing it, but you have to be really flexible about what you see and do. So if you are really flexible, then you can absolutely wing it. The thing that's challenging with winging it is with overnight accommodations. That is the hardest thing to wing it on. I mean, you can, you know, if you can get a last minute flight to any city in Alaska, and if all the rental cars are sold out, which that's getting better during the pandemic, like the height of the pandemic, rental cars were really in short supply. That is getting better. There's also a company called Turo that is sort of like a little bit like Airbnb for cars. I would just caution you, you need to read all the fine print and know what you're getting into, but you can pretty much always find a car on Turo at the last minute. I've done that many times. And if you can find a place to stay, then you're set, right? You could totally wing it. I think, especially if it's midsummer, what's going to be challenging about that is you might have to settle for a hotel that's kind of far from town or not in a great location, like not super convenient to things. It's going to be easier to find a place like that in Anchorage or Wasilla or Fairbanks than it is in, say, Denali or Seward. Again, those are places I mentioned where hotels are very limited and very expensive, and it's going to be hard to wing it there. But yes, you can. I think the other thing I've had people ask me about a lot is camping. And if I'm camping, can I wing it? And sometimes it's the answer to that. So, you know, campgrounds are full on weekends. If you're during the week and you're not too close to Anchorage or on the Kenai Peninsula, you can probably find something. It sort of depends on like what your tolerance is for driving around and looking for camping. My tolerance for that is kind of low, but it's doable. It, again, you just have to be really flexible. And as far as tours go, some tours you may be, you know, it just depends on whether or not they're sold out. So if something is super important to you, you don't want to be winging it. But if you want to just wing it and have be like, I'm going to experience Alaska in whatever way is available to me this weekend, you can absolutely do that.
So let's say it's June. I just discovered I'm going to end up with 3 weeks off from work. Do you think someone could have a good time like next weekend if they just like,
yes.
I found a cheap flight.
Yes. Finding a cheap flight to Alaska in June is not likely, but if it did happen.
Right. I'm giving a very big hypothetical, but you know.
Yeah, so. The winging it and cheapness are not necessarily compatible, right? Because, you know, you might be stuck with kind of an expensive, crappy hotel because it's what's available at the last minute. You might be stuck with a really expensive plane ticket or very terrible connections or something like that, but you might not, you know, you might get lucky. Somebody might cancel at a great hotel or whatever. But as far as, can you have a good time? You can absolutely have a good time as long as you are very flexible. If you're like, I'm going to just drive around and look for hikes I want to do, or I'm going to rent a kayak and take it out on this lake. And if that's the way that you want to spend your time, you absolutely could have a great time. It's if you're wanting to do very specific things, you may not be able to make that happen at the last minute.
What about, here's another scenario that we've never talked about this actually, but I think we have gone to Alaska and borrowed a very good friend's RV. What if someone wants to go to Alaska and they have booked flights and they have rented an RV, which is both lodging and transportation?
Yes.
How much more planning do you think someone needs to do with an RV? I have an answer in my head, but I'm interested to hear what you think.
I think it's the same. The same basic principles apply, except that, like you said, you've got your lodging and transportation figured out together. If you want to go to bigger cities like Anchorage, you can't just park the RV anywhere in town and stay in it. And if you're in an RV, you need a longer site to pull into. You need to have it be somewhat manageable for an RV to get in there. But there are lots of people who camp in RVs all over the place, especially if you don't need hookups, which is like water and sewer and electricity for the RV. If you don't need that, I think it takes a similar amount of planning overall, but it's a little bit different. So if I was renting an RV, I would want to have at least some campground reservations. Some people are more comfortable driving around and finding something than I am. So yeah, and you have to note, you can't just park an RV and camp in it anywhere in Alaska. A lot of people think you can do that. You can't. So it's important to know where you can go, where you can't. The Alaska Public Lands Information Centers are a great resource for that. There's one in Anchorage, one in Tok, one in Fairbanks, and one in Ketchikan. So that's a great resource as far as like, where can I camp or not?
I lived in Alaska for many years before I discovered those, and they're incredible.
They are.
Like map tables with every imaginable quad map laid out, and you can like flip around. And then there's always some super helpful person working there who knows absolutely everything.
Yes.
They're amazing.
They are.
Yeah. So if people want more help from you, like what can you offer beyond the resources of just listening to this podcast?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, all the articles on ordinaryadventures.com that are about Alaska, some of them are also about Washington and British Columbia and the Yukon, but that's a great resource. That's completely free. Also, my weekly travel tips email is completely free. That's in the show notes as well if you want to sign up for that. And then I also have several small digital products that are basically digital downloads that are either $17 or $24. And I'll have the link for those here too. I have the planner that I mentioned earlier. And then I also have several like done for you itineraries there's one that's like, this is a great 7-day car-free itinerary. This is a great 10-day road trip itinerary. This is a great off the beaten track itinerary. So different options like that. And then finally, I also offer one-on-one travel coaching. So if you want to talk through something like this, you can sign up for a half hour Zoom session with me. I'll put that in the show notes as well. And then I do also do full custom itineraries if you want someone to like figure out everything for you based on what you want specifically. That's also something I offer. I feel like that is best for people who have really specific needs, or their group is really diverse, like, you know, multi-generational, or, you know, one person loves hiking and the other person loves bird photography, something like that. But most of my clients who've done that are either looking for like big adventures or something off the beaten track. And that's usually the best person to do a custom itinerary because it's more expensive. So not everyone needs that, but all that information will be in the show notes in case you want to take advantage of any of that.
I want to say if you're listening to this and you think, yeah, I don't know, you know, if this gal knows what she's talking about, next week, Jenny is taking two of our school age family to Fairbanks for a winter adventure, their first time. And I have looked at this itinerary and plan she has for them, and it's mind-blowingly cool.
It's going to be really cool. Yeah.
It's legitimately amazing. I really think it's remarkable. What do you think from, you know, if you've listened to our intro episode, which was episode number one of this podcast, you've heard some of our stories, but Jenny, what experiences do you think have taught you to do this so well? I know that's sort of a locker room question at the NFL. How important, how big was it that you won the Super Bowl? But like, what would you credit from all the 20 some years of experience that you and we have had in and out of Alaska? Where did you learn to plan trips so well?
Oh, thanks, Jay. I think it's a combination of a couple different things. One is just my experience being a guide. I've been a guide for many years. People often ask me if I do guide services now. I don't through my website. I do in another context, but I don't offer guide services myself at the moment. But I think that experience really helps you learn how diverse people are when they travel and how different their needs are and how different the things that they want to do are. And then you also learn how much people have in common, right? Like things that really make a trip special for someone. You learn that over time being a guide. So I think that that is probably the biggest thing. I think the other thing, and it kind of makes me laugh a little to think about this, but I don't remember if we talked about this in episode one, but I am a school counselor and I've worked in schools for a long time. And I learned, I did my school counseling master's program in Fairbanks. And I think that the experience of learning how to listen to people is really important, like really kind of getting beyond the initial conversation to what do you really care about in this trip? And I think being able, I think kind of when it comes to trip planning for clients, what my kind of superpower is really understanding what is going to be the right trip for them. And in, I really try to work that into my articles also so that it can say, hey, if you really want to do this, then this is totally worth it. But it might not be if you don't care about blah. So I guess that's what I'd answer. Thank you for asking that.
If you don't, you know, if you don't have a Jenny available to you to help you think through that, I think there's like, you just dropped some wisdom there about listening to your inner self too, about, you know, I feel like a lot of folks go to Alaska looking for an experience they've been told they should be looking for. And to some degree, you'll even see the tourism industry sometimes responding to that, in that some of the big hotels have developed a style that is what people thought they would want in Alaska, but isn't actually really authentic to Alaska. You know, huge log cabin designs in the interior of Alaska. Well, there's no big logs in north or southeast Alaska. So that's not a style that was there, but people were expecting that. Mm-hmm. And so the industry sort of responded. And I think it's important, like, you know, people have in their heads these things that they've been told they should want to do. And if you don't want to do it, or you do, there's something that, you know, like, listen to that. I'll say that I am not a hiker. I grew up in a national park and I've spent quite a bit of my life hiking for money, working for outdoor land management agencies and the like, and being a professional map maker for a long time. I GPS tracked many, many miles of many, many trails. I don't really enjoy hiking. Mm-hmm. And I had to get over, it was so hard for me to accept that and to say, you know, I'm just, I don't like that. It's not what I want to do. So, you know, it was kind of hard for me to accept that. And I think it would be very easy if I hadn't already had that conversation with myself to be like, well, I need to go hiking in Alaska. That's the thing you do there. Well, if you don't like it, don't do it.
Yes, I completely agree with that. And many people have amazing trips in Alaska without hiking. No problem. That's not something you have to do. I think also along those same lines, like if you don't like small planes and you don't want to go in a small plane, that you can have an amazing trip to Alaska without flight seeing. You shouldn't even worry about it, right? So you want to plan your trip around what you care about when you travel, and then build the trip for that. So if it's wildlife, if it's seeing glaciers, if it's just seeing a new landscape or experiencing different cultures and getting to know people when you travel, you can do that in Alaska just like you can anywhere else. And don't feel if like, you don't like boats, don't go on a boat trip. Even though I am going to just tell you that boat trips in Alaska are incredible. So totally worth it. Same thing with flight seeing. Totally worth it. But if you don't do it, it's also going to be fine and you can still have an amazing trip.
I've seen quite a few people who were afraid of small planes or got horribly seasick but felt like they had to go on the whale watching tour and just came back having had a kind of a tough time. You don't have to do it. And on the other hand, if you want to, whatever it is, like it, you can make it happen.
Yes. Totally yeah. agree with that.
And one of I'm going to circle back to you and just say that at the very beginning, when Jenny identified the first biggest mistake people make of basically planning too many things, making, you know, making it too tight, moving too fast, do leave room. Alaska continues to surprise me despite 20, 30 years of life in and out of it. We were just in Seward last year, I guess it was. And I discovered the most amazing coffee shop on earth in downtown Seward. And it wasn't something that was on my list. I didn't have, I need to find a church that was converted into a coffee shop and art museum in Central Seward on that trip. It wasn't on my plan. And I spent a half a day there. And it was because we had space in that trip that I was able to enjoy that. So I think that's a real takeaway. It's like you need to plan for the structure and the skeleton and then leave space for the serendipity in between.
Yes. And you had that experience because we had that day in Seward where we didn't have anything planned and it was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And the unbelievably good barbecue place. Just a shout out.
Yes. Yes. Firebrand Barbecue. It's another great place in Seward.
That Seward, Alaska was going to have an epic barbecue.
And it does.
It does. Well, is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up this episode?
I think that's it, Jay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I always learn something from you.
Same.
Okay. Well, if you like what you heard today, you can subscribe or feel free to give us a like on Apple Podcasts. And we'll join you next time.